I'd like to now move on to the army, having covered the judiciary, and here again we see many similar processes. During the 1620s and the 1630s, the French crown began to reform the military establishment it had inherited from the 16th century. The aristocratic bands of retainers, which had been characteristic of the military units used during the wars of religion, were gradually replaced by much more professional units, units of mercenary professional soldiers. This also tended to replace clientage ties as a basis of recruitment with royal taxation, so that soldiers were now raised and employed directly through the revenues of the crown rather than through the client networks of the great aristocrats of the realm. Moreover, provincial governors, who often served in military positions, who displeased the king, were now being removed during the early 17th century. And indeed, between 1625 and 1635, King Louis XIII would replace the provincial governors of Béarn, Provence, Burgundy, Dauphiné, Languedoc, Brittany, Picardy, Anjou, Touraine, and the Orléanais, just to name a few. These measures tended to reduce the independent power of the grandees, of the great aristocrats, inside the royal military. But nevertheless, the fact remained that at all levels of the army, even after all of these reforms, and here we get back to this tendency towards contradiction in the crown's efforts to increase its powers, commanding officers still tended to be drawn from the aristocracy. Moreover, the new governors, the ones who replaced those who had been kicked out, rapidly began reinstituting client networks of their own in their new provinces and also within the regimental structure of the army. It is true that these new client networks owed their allegiance primarily to the crown, to Richelieu, and to the king. And it's also worth stressing that after the year 1632, no French aristocrat would ever use troops against an adult king, unlike the phenomenon or the pattern we've seen in the later 16th century. Nevertheless, just like the judiciary, the fundamental nature of the army tended to remain the same because the same kinds of people remained in power. It tended to be an aristocratic preserve, and these people tended to retain certain kinds of strong ideas about their own rights and prerogatives. Let's move on now to provincial administration, because the most striking combination of expanded royal power on the one hand and the persistence of traditional social elites on the other is to be found among a series of provincial administrators known as the intendants. The intendant as a phenomenon had been widely used since the middle of the 16th century, but fairly irregularly, at least at that point. And the idea of an intendant was he was someone who was appointed to go out and investigate a particular identifiable problem or set of problems in a particular province. He was a kind of a specially appointed solution to a point source problem. What's distinctive about the intendant, at least from an institutional point of view, is that the intendant tended to operate at the whim of the crown, on the basis of a commission. It was a limited commission for specific tasks and for a time limit. That is to say, the intendant was not a venal officer. He did not own his position. His position, if you want to think of it this way, was justified by royal law rather than being justified by property law, like the venal officer who owned his post. During the first third of the 17th century, the intendants tended to be used more regularly. And after 1620, roughly speaking, they ceased to be a temporary phenomenon and became more of a semi-permanent fixture of the machinery of the French crown. Indeed, after 1634, the number of intendants would explode, and they would now be sent not just to governorships, where they would have had political responsibilities, but also to financial districts, the so-called généralités, which reveals the rising prominence of fiscal as opposed to political challenges facing the French crown. Now, it should be stressed, and this is a pattern that we've seen before, that the intendants did give the crown greater freedom of action, just like these new courts gave the crown greater freedom of action. But although it is true that the intendants, in their capacity as intendants, held a commission rather than an office, in terms of their social origins, they nevertheless still tended to come from office-holding families. And indeed, many of the intendants, in addition to having that commission, also served as venal officers at the same time. There's a sense, therefore, in which, although we have to say that the intendants allowed the king an awful lot more freedom, they still didn't allow him to move outside the basic structure of the social order in France, because the intendants themselves belonged to that order and formed a very important part of it.